speaker is Michelle Quigley. And Michelle will present on characteristics of the soil matrix of microaggregates based on computed microtomography images. Welcome.
I'm going to start off by saying I'm sorry I lost my voice, so bear with me. So first of all, what is computed microtomography? It's an imaging technology that's very almost identical to a medical CT scan, which most people are familiar with. That's what a medical CT scan is. So if you've ever been forced to lay down there and be like, I don't want to move for 20 minutes, we do the same thing with aggregates, only they don't complain about not having to move. And what we get is these 3D images. This is an actual image I've obtained of these aggregates, which is really cool. And if we actually take a Z slice out of this, this is what they look like. And the grayscale values actually roughly correlate to average atomic density, which is pretty close to atomic mass, and it's averaged over the voxel area. So what we get is mineral components with heavier components like iron, magnesium, silica show up as this really light color, and pores show up as this darker color because they have carbon, oxygen, and nitrogen. So how these things are typically used, it's very difficult to use the raw images on their own. And the reason behind this is this aggregate is taken at one point, this is the taken at another, and they have this approximately the same mineralogy. So the grayscale values are not consistent for each. The relative grayscale value in the images is the same, but the absolute is not. So it's very hard to use. Generally what happens is you use thresholding, which can give you the pore structure. This is actually a pore structure at a very small size, which is why it's hard to see, which can also give us pore sizes. In this case, the red color is small pores, and the greens and yellows are larger pore sizes. We also can identify organic matter. So this red stuff is organic matter that's been imaged, been identified. And you can also use additives such as iodine that makes, and then use K-edge to make image subtraction so you can tell where stuff is. That's usually used for modeling water. But there has been very little attention paid to the actual soil matrix, usually because it's difficult to use the raw image. So we decided to use geostatistics, which, if you didn't know, is a technique for analyzing spatial data. And it creates this variogram. And the important parts of this variogram is the nugget, which is where the variogram intersects the y-axis. And this is the spatial variation that is below our sample size. Next is the sill, and that's where this curve flattens out. And that is a measure of the spatial variability in the sample. And the last component is the range, which is the point, the lag distance. So this distance is actually how far away it is from the next thing you're measuring. At what distance you reach the sill, and that's a measure of how much stuff is spatially correlated, or they also say it's spatial autocorrelation. So where were these aggregates collected? Well, these aggregates were collected from the Kellogg Biological Station, LTER, in Hickory Corners, Michigan. The sampling took place in February of 2012. We sampled three managements, the conventional tillage, which is a corn, soybean, wheat rotation that is conventionally managed with disc tillage and the recommended fertilizer and pesticides and all the normal chemicals. There's a biologically based, which we used to refer to as organic, but the organic people got angry at us because we don't use any inputs, which means it is completely biologically based. There's no fertilizer added at all. And then we have a primary succession treatment, which is a old field that's allowed to grow, and it's burned every year just like the Native Americans would have burned their crops. So these aggregates were dry sieved at the 5 to 6 millimeter aggregates were collected. I did forget to mention that biologically placed also has corn, soybean, wheat, but it also has a rye cover crop after corn and a red clover cover crop after wheat into corn. And the images we collected were at a 13 micron resolution. So each voxel is 13 by 13 by 13 microns. So the geostatistical analysis, we took five cubes that were semi-randomly selected from each aggregate. And the reason they were semi-randomly is that we had to make sure there was no edges and there were no large stones that were completely taking up the cubes. So they were semi, they had a little bit of, they weren't completely random. So this is a cube that we took. They were 100 by 100 by 100 voxels, so that's 13,000 by 13,000 by 13,000. And then we erased the pores to just look at the matrix. And we obtained 3D variograms from R, and then I fitted the variograms in SAS. And the reason I had to do that is these aggregates took 8 hours on a supercomputer to run, and because the fitting requires you to actually look at the variograms, I was not able to do those in R with the data that came off of the High Performance Computing Center. This is one of those variograms, and you can see there's a mismatch between the actual variogram and the model. These were all exponential models that were fit. So we did a three-point line to better approximate the nugget because that's where it was not fitting as well. So what did we find out? The three-point slope was different. The biologic place in early succession was different than the conventional tillage. The nugget-to-sill ratio was different only in the biologically based. The sill was also different between the biologically based and the early succession. And the intercept and sill, which is basically the same as the nugget-to-sill, was also different than biologically based. And all of these factors have to do with variability. So it's saying that the biologically based and the early succession are more variable spatially than the conventional tillage. What was interesting to note on the non-significant was how much the nugget, which was that variability that was below our 13 microns, is similar, and how much the range was also similar for all of those objects, meaning that they had approximately the same spatial correlation. So what drove this is where are these sources of differences in this variability come from? These samples were approximately the same mineralogy, so that's probably not where they came from. They were sampled from the same location in the same year, and the samples that were compared were also from the same block, so they were as uniform as possible. So we postulated that it might be because of dissolved organic matter. And the reason is this dissolved organic matter can cause the voxels containing that organic matter to be darker, because if you remember, carbon shows up lighter in these images. And then we decided that it was possibly related to pore structure, which I'll go into in a second. So we had two hypotheses going. So if we have a pore and we have dissolved organic matter traveling through that pore, it can come out of that pore and come into the matrix and get caught, and then there will be less, so it'll be lighter and lighter still because that less and less can travel. The other option is if you have organic matter and dissolved organic matter going through, and then you have bacteria come along, they can actually eat closest to the pore and it'll actually get darker going out. Those were our two working hypotheses. And the reason we thought it was related to pore structure is if you look, you can see this is a conventional tillage aggregate, and this is a biologically based, and this is a primary succession, and you can obviously see there is a big difference in pore structure between these. And most of the conventional tillage looks like this. It's very loose. There's not a lot of pore structure, and these are very typical for those. They have a lot of pore structure, and they're very interconnected. So how did I actually analyze these? So the pores were identified using integrated kriging, which is also a spatial analysis technique, in 3DMA RockWorks. Now, we actually eroded 1 millimeter of this aggregate because we wanted to make sure there wasn't any effect due to our mislabeling of the outside of the aggregate. So these were the pores that were identified. And then we found layers, which is what this actually is a finish of, at 5, 10, and 15, and the actual distances are right there. We did use one voxel pass to account for any partial volume effects that may have been from misidentification. Then, because we couldn't use the raw grayscale values, I used this equation of the average grayscale value of the section I was looking at, which is the layer, minus the average grayscale value of the total sample over the total sample. So it's an average difference from the total sample that we're looking at. I also deleted the 255 because the 255 happens to be anything that's over a, past a certain atomic weight point. So that was a way to make things more uniform. So what did I find out? Well, if we take a typical pore, and then we move out, and these are the three sections. Closest to the pore is darkest with the high variability. Intermediate is almost identical to the mass sample, the total sample. And then furthest from the pore, you get the lightest values, which means the least of organic matter, hopefully, and the least variability. And this was consistent for all three treatments. What wasn't consistent was if you look at the average, they're the same for this, the first one and the second one, but in this third far out, you actually have a more lightening in the organic, well, the biologically based and the primary succession, which was actually surprising to us. We thought there would be more because there would be more organic matter in those treatments. And your variability also is higher in those. So from this, we went, okay, for all treatments, voxels lighten as they move out from the pore. And we believe this is related to dissolved organic matter migrating out of the pores. But this strange, why this there's this rapid lightening at that far distance was interesting. So we came up with two hypotheses that there was actually an absence of micropores, so those are pores that are less than those 13 microns, in biologically based and the primary section succession due to more root pores, and root pores would compact as they move through. The other possibility is that there's less of this dissolved organic matter reaching further into the soil, and because we have so many pores, there's a lot of pore surface area where that dissolved organic matter can get stuck, so it doesn't migrate as far into the aggregate. So we actually, and a little bit on root versus wet-dry, you can actually somewhat identify them. This would be a root pore, and this would be a crack pore. These tend to be more in biologically based and primary succession. These are more in CT. These are root, although you can get them from macrobiota, and these are due to wet-dry satchels. And this is believed to have some compaction. This one doesn't. But we couldn't tell, like I said, we couldn't tell between the micropores, so we actually did a higher resolution scan. These are the same images. This is at 13. This is at 2 microns. So what we found is there's no difference in the microporosity. So this is at each distance for crack pores and root pores. And if we look at the different treatments, there's also no significant differences. So what are we doing next? We do know that microporosity is unlikely to be a reason for the difference in the average grayscale values as one moves out for the PAR. So we're pretty confident this dissolved organic matter is the most likely. I want to compare the dissolved organic matter content with the surface area of the pores for each treatment. And if there's a lower dissolved organic matter ratio to surface area, that means there's more dissolved organic matter that can be bound to the surface near the pores. The other thing that we're attempting to do is use osmium. Like I mentioned, they use iodine to see where water is. Osmium will bind to carbon-carbon double bonds, and you use a K-edge, and then you can actually see the organic matter. With that, I'd like to thank my KBS, because they in their funding, which is NSF and LTR, Michigan State, and Sustainable Corn, which was funded by the USDA. Thank you.
We have time for a quick question.
Yes.
Have you considered clay colloids that have mobilized because of tillage causing that change?
No, I hadn't, and that's an interesting one. It wasn't something we expected, so we were just kind of going, but that might be an interesting thing to look at is yeah, I'll have to look at that. Thank you very much. Anything else?
Any other questions? Yes.
Well, how
many aggregate did you scan?
So in that collection, we have about 10 per. So those are 10 aggregates per treatment. We have more, but I haven't run any of the analysis on that. But those are 10 individual aggregates, so it's a pretty good number. Yes? So it depends on the size of your aggregate and your this resolution you want to get. At 13, we can do about 10 minutes. We go down to 5, that goes to 20. When we did the 2 micron, we went all the way up to almost an hour. So it depends on the size, because each size they have to take so many rotations, and so it takes longer. So it's about 20 minutes for 5 microns, and it's about 10 for 13, and 2 microns is an hour.